Hey, Elliot.
Hey, Brian.
What's the talk of the table?
Today... Wait, Brian, there's no one else here.
Yeah, I just thought we'd talk to each other.
Ew.
Yeah, just talk to each other.
Okay. I mean...
Oh, we've been doing this for like a year. I figured we should like reflect on what we've learned.
Yeah.
I think people will like it.
I guess.
No. I think it's good. It's good. This is a good idea.
Yeah, it's a good, yeah, sure.
What?
Today, we are talking about a year in review of Talk Elliot? Of the Table.
Elliot?
Hi, Brian.
We're having fun. We've been doing this for a year. We get to mix it up now.
We get to be a little silly as a treat.
But no, we've been doing this for a little over a year now. I think it's 31 episodes as of time of recording. There'll be a few more released before this one comes out. And we wanted to look back on what we've learned over the past year and how we have grabbed those lessons and pulled them into our own lives and creative journeys. And specifically looking around, like, what is our current ethos around game design, actual play, and the TTRPG community? And kind of looking at this podcast of, like, there are a lot of those things that I now kind of hold as truths within me that were pulled directly from conversations we had on this podcast. So kind of, like, tracing the origins of some of these ideas.
Yeah. Been a good year. Been a good year.
It has been a good year. And I love that this... I love this podcast is still finding ways to surprise me.
Yeah.
We're still getting guests on where I'm like, oh, I don't know why, but if for some reason I was just kind of like, oh, after like, you know, 20 episodes, we'll have done it or something. And obviously that's not the case. But
there are only 20 episodes worth of things to talk about in games, actually.
Apparently that's what I thought. But it's every episode after that I've been consistently surprised and excited by the new things we learn from new people in this community.
Yeah. I guess to start, maybe what do you think has kind of been the biggest surprise for you this year?
Biggest surprise, like from a specific episode or just kind of in general?
I think in general. You said the show continues to surprise you. What was like what's a moment you could pull out?
You know, and this is from the show, but it's also outside of the show, is our episode with Bridget Jeffries. Seeing Bridget GM at Breakout Con was like one of the most transcendent experiences of the past year for me in tabletop. It was a moment where I went into something not knowing what to expect. Just, you know, Shenouk was performing. I was like, oh, let's go see Shenouk perform. And then Bridget blew me away. Blew both of us away so much that we were like, oh, we left that performance being like, we have to talk to this person.
We have to talk to this person right now. 100%.
That for me, that had that feeling of I used to work as like a semi-professional magician. I do like card magic and stuff. And there was a certain point in my life where I got good enough where anytime I saw a magician perform, I was like, ah, that like I was interested in the craft of it, but I wasn't amazed. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember seeing a show that blew me away, and like I felt real magic again. That was the experience watching Bridget. It was like, I thought I had seen how this was done. I thought I'd seen like really good GMing. And then I saw it done a whole different way. And it blew me away.
Yeah. No, I love that episode. That was so fun. Bridget is such a delight. I would watch Bridget play any game on any size stage ever.
100%. What about you? What was the surprise from this year on this show?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I almost said the Bridget Jeffries episode too. But I think like... Man, this is like kind of cheesy, but like I feel more and more when we have these conversations, like when we first set out to do this podcast, and this is inspired kind of by something that Rowan Zioli said to me recently, where it was like, when we started this podcast, I think we were punching a bit above our weight class, you know, like with like the guests we were going after. Like, I think that, you know, we were a brand new show. And like, it was like always a surprise to me when people said yes. It was like, you know, folks who listen know I believe in sends out emails, gets back emails. But like, it still was like, oh, we're getting to talk to like people whose work I really admire and respect. And I think that the thing this year that I have felt is like us coming up to meet that weight class we were punching up above. And I feel like the show has become, it's really surprised me the way the show has become kind of like an industry staple for some people. Not everyone, but like the more like game designers and producers I meet, they're like, ah, this is my favorite interview show because it feels like what I want to hear about as a professional in TTRPGs. So that's been kind of just like a really delightful surprise of just like that, that the show has really found its footing, and like we have like risen to it, and it feels much more like we're talking to peers than that like we are, you know, reaching out to the stars and hoping someone comes back.
I was going to say that exact same sentiment of it feels like we're talking to peers. Like a year ago, if we had talked to Quentin Smith from Quinn's Quest, or if we'd talked to Alex Roberts or Johan Noor, I'd have been like, oh, they're doing us a solid. like they're taking pity on this small show. And now, like when we have those conversations, it feels very much like we're sitting around a table shooting the shit with a buddy.
Yeah, it's great.
It is really rewarding. It's not a thing I would have thought, but it's nice to be able to sit in an interview with someone whose work you really respect and admire, and who, you know, I look at Johan Noor, I'm like, that guy's better at design and layout than me for sure. But we can have a conversation as peers learning from each other. Obviously, me learning way more from him than he's ever learning from me. But that is really rewarding to see. And I hope that comes across in this podcast. Like I hope that us being at a level of comfort with our guests, and also at a level of, I guess, comfort with ourselves, or like, you know, losing some of the imposter syndrome, leads to better conversations, because we can get more at the meat of things rather than looking up to someone and, you know, treading around carefully of what are we allowed to ask.
Yeah. And as we always said in the early days, that once you've been on the podcast, you are obligated to be our friend. And so that's
true.
Just continued
to hold.
That's
why we started
this. Yeah. That's why we started it.
Though, you know, we say that as a joke, but we have become friends with a lot of people because of this podcast.
Yeah.
Like, the Lynn Codega, Rowan Zioli,
the Triangle Agency
Dragon,
folks,
Triangle Agency
Jay
folks.
Stroutman.
Yeah. It is, you know, if you want more friends, start a podcast. Official recommendation.
No, don't do that.
Don't do that.
But it has been a fun side benefit of like really getting to meet and get to know some really cool people.
It is another reminder of something that I said when we first started this podcast. It's great that this community is so supportive of other people in the community, of like being willing to come on a show like ours and talk about some of the nitty-gritty stuff about the work that you're doing. And sometimes a fair amount of the time we're asking questions of like, what is the non-glamorous side of your job? Like, what are the mistakes that you've made? Where have you fucked up? And it's great that people have been very forthcoming in answering a lot of those, because they want people to, they want to help guide people off of the detours that a creative journey can take and make sure you're staying on that straight line.
I'm reminded of our conversation with Jasper was one of those, where we talked to Jasper a lot about like, what does life look like after you, you know, sort of reach the metaphorical mountain of D20? Like, how do you keep going and stay sustained? And I feel like so much of the way that I think about sustainability in my own creative journey and like full-time creative work, full-time artistic work comes, you know, there's a lot of things that come from that conversation with Jasper about like, you know, respecting the work, and like, that's what it's ultimately about. It's like, you know, you can reach these peaks, but ultimately you got to respect and love the work.
This year has been particularly noteworthy for both of us because we have made podcasting and game design our full-time jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think this podcast has been even more important for that, because not only are, and I don't want to speak for you, but I'm definitely using it as, hey, I see that you're doing this better than I can. Teach me how to do it better than I'm currently doing it. Like, I come into a lot of these conversations with a problem that I'm currently having in the real world that will affect my life, mm-hmm. and being like, hey, let's see how we can fix this. And let's hopefully like be able to learn a lesson from it and make sure that we can make sure that I can do this job better. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think 100%. I think that like, oh, so in so many ways, like thinking about getting to talk to, I think like folks like Banana, folks like Jay, folks like Grant have all been like, here are people who have made games their full-time job and continue to be. I think the thing of it is, it's just like Jay, Banana, and Grant aren't just heads of games companies, they all three of them are active game designers, you know, and they like they stay in the thick of the creative despite having to also run small businesses. And so, yeah, I countless little lessons from anybody who is like remotely doing what I want to do, what we want to do. I feel like it's, yeah, it's so, so valuable.
That is the thing that I have been struggling with and learning from is transitioning now. You know, we funded Bitcherton. We got a bunch of money to make that show. We're making that show in conjunction with making My First Dungeon and Talk of the Table and releasing a bi-weekly newsletter and keeping up with social media and Discord and all this stuff. And having to do the like crunchy stuff of running a business on top of being creative is a high wire act that I succeed and fail at in equal measures.
Yes, I fail every day and also succeed when you zoom out.
Exactly, right? You're falling, but you're slowly failing forward. And being able to talk to people who are much further ahead in that creative journey and in that, you know, business journey has been really rewarding. I think one of the things that we did this year that I really liked that you pitched that we should do, and I'm really glad that we did it, was our Zine Month run.
Yeah, that was so fun. It's been really, really fun to watch. I feel like Zine Month is always one of those times where you get to see either a new class of designers emerge or like, you know, some designers who have kind of kept a small project make a big step into like printing something. And it's been really fun to watch the folks that we talk to, you know, now carry on into like further success and further work. Like Nick Gralowicz, who we talked to for Home.
Mm-hmm.
Home obviously had an explosive Kickstarter and
it's still doing great.
And it's still doing great. It's still like, you know, I feel like Nick really like came out swinging and established himself, and it's been really cool to see. He just gave me notes on my most recent game, and we get to see him at cons and stuff. B. Marsolier, who's a friend, came on for 100% Modern Ghosts and is now in the thick of kickstarting, although maybe not at time of release, but recently kickstarted A Fool's Errand with Jay. And then Roderick Magsino, who did Archiver. I just am looking up at my shelf now and seeing this Archiver small book, not even a zine. It's a small little perfect bound book. Beautiful book.
It's gorgeous.
And I think I'm so jealous Roderick's about layout. To do something else for Mothership Month. So
yeah,
it's great to see. I definitely think we should do it again next year. If we can make the time. I'm already looking at Q1 of next year and being like, ah! But we should do it again next year.
It is noteworthy that we've started using language like Q1 2025.
We really are like, I don't know. It is an interesting thing of how like talk about how we've changed in the last year. Like, we really are taking everything so much more serious as a business. And like at times that bums me out, but at other times I'm like, it's kind of cool that we get to like make money. You know, not a lot of money. Let's be very clear. Not a lot of money.
Yeah. Okay. Let's be very clear here. Neither of us are making good money or, quite frankly, sufficient
enough
money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And neither of us are making enough.
So, like, you know, just to be very frank, like, the things that people can do to support independent artists are varied and can be done at any cost level. Like, just for instance, and we say this at the end of every episode, you know, rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. One of the most important things for podcasts, because they are not inherently discoverable, is word of mouth. Podcasts grow by word of mouth, and that is pretty much it. It is hard to search for podcasts. We did a listener survey not too long ago, and I think of the people we surveyed, like two people said they just found us searching Spotify. Everyone else, it was a recommendation from a friend. Someone posted about it on Discord. Someone posted about it on Twitter. Someone posted about it on Instagram. The best way, if you like the show, if you're listening to this episode, seriously, go leave us a 5-star review on your podcast player. Go leave us a rating. Go tell a friend about it. If you like this type of stuff and want to see it grow, want to see it continue, that's the way you can do it. And that costs you nothing. And ultimately, you know, if you tell a friend and they love it, you've just gained some great social capital with that friend. So we're doing you the favor.
Social capital. Yeah. No, that's how you be a hashtag cool game designer, is you tell your game design friends to listen to Talk of the Table.
But I think, you know, we have had to think a little bit more business-like about a lot of the things with many-sided media of like, you know, with my first dungeon, it's, you know, if we're going after some kind of sponsored season, who should we approach? If we're playing a game that's not sponsored, what game is, you know, worth playing, or what game should we play considering there's not that inherent like money coming in?
Yeah.
And I think even in this podcast, it's a mix of, we definitely want to talk to people that the vast majority of people haven't heard of, but also like, you got to get people in the door with some big name interviews. Like, you have to kind of think of things both ways. And that's not the most fun thing all the time, but it is something that has become a reality.
Yeah, I am still, when I look at the year, I am still largely proud of the mix of recognizable automatic listen names and you know, indie folks that we think need more attention. I am really glad that we still hit that mix, even as we've grown.
I do think that our relationship is, I always push us towards the more known people and you always pull us towards the more indie people, and we end up finding a good middle ground. But if either one of us was doing this podcast alone, it would be worse for it, because either it'd be only way too indie people and not enough people would listen, or it'd just be like looking only to the top five people and then you'd run out of episodes after five people.
100%. No, you're so right. It's funny because I think there's an interesting thing about, there's probably some ways that like our creative relationship has even changed in the last year. Like, I feel like in the early episodes, we talked a lot about push and pull. And I feel like you and I have come much closer together in the center than we used to push and pull.
That's true.
Like, in general, in work, I feel like we used to just like, not argue, but I think we used to just like, we used to be playing tug of war a lot more. And now we're like just kind of I feel like we're in line on a lot more things than we used to be. I don't know.
I think some of that is when you work with someone for long enough, you know, like, I know there are certain places where I'm like, I'm not going to pull there because obviously he's going to pull back. And like, so let's pre-negotiate without having to talk about going closer together.
Totally. I guess in that vein, do you think that like we've still kind of improved as interviewers? Because I know we talked about at the top of the year, like that we felt like we did. Like, how do you feel about kind of where you're at where we're at as interviewers?
I think, to be very honest, I think you've improved significantly more than I've improved.
Yeah?
Yeah. And this isn't just like to blow smoke up your ass, but you have a much better ability of getting to a question. And I end up rambling more. I end up being color commentary and you end up being the interview, which isn't something I particularly love that I often play into my worst tendencies of, if you listen to recent interviews, there's more times when I end a sentence with, there's no question there, I just wanted to say something. I'm like, no, this is an interview show, Brian. You need to ask a question.
But that's almost like, I think that's almost a running bit on the show now of like, we both do that. And I think there's a charm to, I don't have a question, but I just wanted to say how cool I thought something was.
That's true.
And also to ease your self-doubt, I guess, here, I want to say that like, I think what you're identifying that you're really good at is like, you are very good at synthesizing conversations. Like, I think that when like, yeah, I can bring out a question and force a question into a point, but like, I think that like when you zoom out on a conversation, I find that you synthesize points together extremely, extremely well. And I think that you've gotten better at that over the year.
I'll take that. I think the thing that I want to, you know, improve on in the next year of us doing this show is the thing we talk about, the thing that we joke about a lot of times in like, whenever we finish an interview with most people, they kind of, I think when someone is getting interviewed, you end up just talking more than the interviewers. And that's kind of what an interview show is. And a lot of people will be just a little bit self-conscious, like, oh, I feel like I was talking a lot. And we always give the semi-joking answer, but it is very true that if we're doing our job right, we're supposed to ask you a question and get out of the way.
Yeah.
And I want to try to do a little bit better about getting to that edge point and getting out of the way faster.
Sure.
Because I think there is that little bit that is lost with me sticking around a little too long. And I think you are right. You know, me coming in at the end and synthesizing things, I think I have gotten better at that. I want to get out of the way faster and get out of the way cleaner at the start of a question.
That makes sense.
Your next favorite game is on My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon.
Hello and welcome to My First Dungeon.
Ho, 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 and welcome to My First Dungeon.
From Sad Space Cowboys.
Kamari takes out a lighter from their pocket and goes, this bar's next. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Let's go.
To death metal Viking cats.
Hello Kitty, you see Melody Tuffington flying through the air, jacked as shit, massive legs, to horny snowmen?
The sad part is that Joshua never gave Frosty a penis.
No.
And everything in between.
It was a dark and stormy night.
We've got something for everyone.
You're a special Gertrude girl in a special Gertrude world. Happy birthday, happy birthday. I'm not a skeleton.
Learn the game, then hear it in action.
That's Snake Eyes minus two. That's a zero.
Snake Eyes, that means that we have our very first plot twist. Anytime somebody rolls doubles, we get a plot twist.
So grab some headphones.
And get lost in a story with us.
I'll be honest, I don't know all the rules of it. We'll kind of figure that out as we go. But do you want to just play? I've got some great stories to tell you.
And remember,
if you're having fun, you're already doing it right.
Oh, fuck.
Hey there, it's Elliot from the Many Sided Media team. In addition to playing and producing here on My First Dungeon, I'm also a game designer, known for such games as Something Is Wrong With The Chickens, a rules-like game of chickens, eldritch horror, and revenge. Project Echo, a solo time travel game played in the pages of a planner. And the upcoming Rom-Com Drama Bomb, a three-player game of meet-cutes and mayhem. If you like weird and unique games and want to bring something new to your table, head to moreblueberries.shop and use code MYFIRSTDUNGEON for 20% off your order. That's MOREBLUEBERRIES.shop. Thanks.
You know, a big thing we talk about on the show is we talk to a lot of game designers and we talk to a lot of actual play performers and producers. And a thing we like to talk about both on mic and off mic is kind of the state of actual play, you know, where it's at, what's happening. And I think this year a lot of stuff has happened. I don't, you know, if we just look at, you know, the big shows, Dimension 20 is playing Madison Square Garden. They're also doing like a tour of other shows. NADPOD played Carnegie Hall. Critical Role is going to be playing Carnegie Hall. They've, you know, played a bunch of other big stadiums. It is a thing that is becoming, you know, Encounter Party came out on, you know, television, like as a full television show, you know, 22 episode on a D&D's Fast Channel. A lot of stuff has changed and a lot of stuff has stayed the same. Like it's tough because it's like, it is getting bigger, but it's kind of like, is it, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I hadn't put this thought into words, but like, there is something that is a little sad in me that in the year of doing this show and in the couple years of thinking about actual play, we haven't seen a real strong new step onto the big stage for a show. You know what I mean? We're still talking about D20. We're still talking about Critical Role. We're still talking about NADPOD. And that's not to say that like the ambitious middle, as Emily Friedman calls it, isn't growing. I do think it is. And I do think we're watching like our peers grow, but I don't know. I guess maybe I didn't know I hoped that something would emerge, but I think I did hope that something would emerge to kind of shake up the landscape a little bit more.
But I think a few more things have, there's been more swings at it. Like, I think, you know, and this is also looking at like larger places, but like DesiQuest was a pretty big swing at it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, obviously it was very good. It didn't become Dimension 20. You know what I mean? It didn't achieve escape velocity. What is it? Goblin Quest? The new Geek & Sundry one has just come out.
Goblin Quest, right, right.
Also doesn't look like it'll probably achieve escape velocity. Still going to be very good, but not going to be, you know, Dimension 20. Pixel Circus has done a couple of interesting things. Same thing. What it feels like is there are more people making stuff. Also, you know, the Panic Table. As, like, someone who's taking a totally independent player who is taking a swing at something that looks as good as Dimension 20, like, when we first met Cameron, he said, like, oh, yeah, I saw Dimension 20, and I thought I could do that. And I remember in my head scoffing And then he pulled up the trailer and I was like, oh, fuck, you can't do that. You did
like,
do
oh, shit, you're right. Yeah, damn.
And like, I was just like so wrong immediately. But I saw what I thought was hubris, and really what it was just fact.
Yeah.
So there have been more people making those swings.
No, you're right. There is a lot of good movement.
And I do think that more people are doing interesting experimentation. Like, more shows are trying new things. Like, there are, it feels like to me, significantly more shows not just doing D&D. Significantly more shows doing interesting stuff with, you know, sound design or style. I'm thinking of Tales Yet Told.
Voices in the Woods.
Voices in the Woods, yes. I think something like Beyond the Brook, really playing up like Over the Garden Wall.
Transplanar doing their first video series. Yeah, people are pushing.
Transplanar doing their first video series. People are pushing, but there hasn't been, you know, like you said, there hasn't been that breakout. But the, you know, to take M's term, the ambitious middle feels like it's getting more ambitious. And I'm wondering when it will happen that one of them will pop off and what it will take. Because I don't quite know what it'll take. Like,
I don't either. I don't, that's the thing. For everything we learn about actual play, you know, and like about game design, there is still a like an ethereal little fairy that somebody has to grab out of the air to find success. Like, it's like if you blink, it'll go by it. And like, no matter all the lessons in the work, there's still an element of this that is lightning in a bottle, I think is maybe the slight disappointment, or it's the slight, you know, comfort of the industry, is that it's like, yeah, you can't brute force your way to lightning in a bottle, but like, you can. I actually there's a lesson in this year, and I think that this is something Aaron Voigt brought up, and I think Will Yopes might have brought it up, about making art for 30 sickos, and then you brought up this idea of 1,000 fans, and I think it's like something for me and for us, like as we've become more of a business, is like, we don't need to be Dimension 20 or Critical Role in order to like find a living. And I think that what we need is like a dedicated base. And I think that that's something that like we've worked harder and harder to build. And I think that that's sort of the comfort for me of like, yeah, there is a path to sustainability, like that isn't explosion.
I think it is just the thing of, you know, because we see TikTok so often with like, you know, 10 million views, you scroll to TikTok and it has 1 million likes. And then you go to Twitter and something has, you know, 100 retweets or quotes or whatever. But then you look at podcasts and like 80,000 downloads would make you massive. 10,000 downloads would be massive. Like, you could sustain yourself off 10,000 downloads an episode. And it's seeing that, like, I think you just have to remember that the scales are different in different mediums. And sometimes it's really hard to remember that. It's really hard to remember that sometimes.
It's very hard to remember it, 100%.
I actually, you know, and this is an outlier, because I don't think it's fair to add this to like a new breakout show. But, you know, last year, January of last year, was when Worlds Beyond Number premiered. And obviously that has Brenly Mulligan and Lou Wilson and Erica Ishii and Bria Iyengar. Like, it's not fair to say that came
But they've
out.
Been sustaining.
They've been sustained, and they came into a space and almost immediately became, you know, the top three podcasts, top two podcasts. It's like them and Adventure Zone. But that did require, you know, having four of the most well-known actual play performers jumping in a new thing. But they did do something that no one else had done, and that was, you know, utilize the sound design and the soundscaping of Taylor Moore and taking these performers that everyone knew from much shorter form things and giving them the world to expand on. So it's like, they did do something very different there. It wasn't what everyone was doing. It was significantly higher lift. And it was like really looking towards the future. Like, they planned, we're going to do multiple years of this one campaign. And they've been delivering on that. And, you know, Taylor's been upping his sound design each and every time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll be really curious to see. I think they will. I'll be really curious to see if they hold on to everyone with their next campaign, which they'll be doing after Arc 4. They just announced recently this like spacefaring.
With Abrea taking over and doing a space campaign. I think they will. I think, you know, the second you change a GM, there's always going to be people who leave, but there's going to be an equal amount of people who come in. And I think I'm really excited to see Abria do a long-form campaign, because the only things I've seen her do are on Dimension 20, which are long-form, but you know, they're 10, 12 episodes.
Side quest length, yeah.
I'm excited to see 50 episodes, you know what I mean? And 50 episodes of, like, a deep lore that you couldn't quite do on something like Dimension 20. Like, it just doesn't compute.
I also can't wait to hear what system they're playing.
Yeah, it'll be fun. You know, I'm trying to think of, like, who else. I don't know. I don't know what the next thing to explode is, because I think Worlds Beyond Number definitely did. It definitely did, you know, reach that catapulting leap, you know, just in the number of downloads and patrons they're able to, like, that is a podcast that can sustain itself and sustain all the people within it. But it needed all of them to be incredibly well-known beforehand. Like, that was their unfair advantage. For something new to come into the space and explode in a similar level, I don't know what it will take. Will it be just another D&D podcast with a really great cast? Will it be a new system breaking through? Will it be a new hook of something? Will it be,
will it
you
be
know,
my first dungeon?
Will it be my first dungeon? Or, you know, will it be, you know, we haven't seen a big hit from, like, Gen Z. We haven't seen Gen Alpha.
Gen Alpha, probably not old enough. I don't know where the line is, but yeah. I don't ever know how old everyone is. Some of our peers could be younger.
That's true. I just always assume everyone's my age. You're younger than me, and I always just assume you're 33.
Yeah. And I will not say my age on mic. I never will.
I'll say it. 33.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's actual play. I mean, I think, like, a lot of things have changed. A lot of things are the same. And there's still a lot of cool things to be excited about.
Yeah. I like that I'm seeing more people trying new stuff. It feels like more people are trying systems.
I'm excited to see what Jasper's studio puts out in the next year. I know they're about to do a big horror show. I'm excited to see what Panic Table does next, what the folks at Transplanar do next. Blackwater D&D has been doing some interesting experimentation. Hard as a Dungeon, another one. Yeah, just excited to see what happens. I'm excited to see what Planet Arcana does for their next arc. But I think kind of like the other, you know, the other aspect of a lot of what we talk about is game design. And I'm trying to kind of synthesize in my head where game design is at now versus a year ago. And I don't know. I think like there are good things and bad things. I think that like there's a really good thing of like this idea of specificity, I think, is something people are playing with in really fun ways. There are so many solo and duet games, I feel like, this year. I feel like this year, like, most of the big breakaway hits have been solo and duet games.
And also, not only that, like, a lot of big games that are not solo and duet games, people have been asking, hey, is there a solo version of this game? Can you play this game solo? Can you play this game with two players? Like, for Orbital Blues Afterburn, you did solo rules for. For Paint the Town Red, you are possibly going to do solo rules for if the stretch goal gets hit.
And for Hunter Hunted with Dylan and Megan.
And for Hunter Hunted. If you had asked me a year ago what solo games would have been doing, I'd have been like, oh, they're probably still chugging along. It feels like they are exploding much quicker than a lot of standard tabletop role-playing games.
I'm also interested in this idea of like, what was that big funding earlier this year that had the great, like, retro futurism sort of art? Astro something?
Oh, Astro Prisma.
Astro Prisma.
Astro Prisma.
When I look at the past year and I look at Astro Prisma and I look at Ion Heart and I look at a game that's crowdfunding right now, Wires in the Woods on BackerKit, what I'm amazed about is that people are making chunky solo games. Like these are three dense solo games. Like that there is an appetite for like, I want a hardcover book full of solo play. I mean, like, obviously, Thousand Year Old Vampire, you know, is like one of the preeminent solo games, but like the more that I see games that have a book that looks like a, you know, six player adventure game, but it's for a solo game, I'm so interested by it. I'm so interested in that sort of trend that people are buying, because it seems like Ironheart, Wires in the Woods, and Astro Prisma are like three big solo game books.
You know, I think what it is, and I really don't want this to sound flippant, because it's It's not meant to be, but it feels like people are taking solo games more seriously, like designers are taking them more seriously as books. Like they're not just a small thing you release as a zine or a small thing you release as like a side project. They are your, like if you look at Astro Prisma's Kickstarter page, it is gorgeous. And like there's so much art, it's gorgeous. It's this crazy layout. They're like throwing as much into this Kickstarter as Triangle Agency did for their game.
Right.
And I don't, and you know, I'm sure someone will prove me wrong, but not a lot of solo games were taking themselves that seriously.
Sure. Yeah, I could see that.
As like a physical product. Like I can only really think of Thousand Year Old Vampire. And that's probably showing more of my ignorance than anything.
I think that's almost Thousand Year Old Vampire's like secret to its success is that like,
yeah,
Tim Hutchings made a beautiful, beautiful book when people weren't kind of thinking that way about solo games. So no, I think there's something to that. The negative side of that a little bit for me is like how much crowdfunding has become, and I think this was a problem a year ago, but it just feels like it just gets worse and worse over time, is like how much like as game designers and publishers we have to think about crowdfunding as like a shopping center for customers online, you know, or for potential backers. It's like I was lamenting this with a fellow designer recently. You know, when we go to crowdfunding, we need to make it look like the book is done or the game is done. Like that, like, because backers are going to pages to be like, oh, is this something that I am going to buy and it's guaranteed and like it's already done and like I'm going to get it in 6 months. And it's like, it's kind of gone are the days of crowdfunding as, hey, I need, you know, $10,000 to sustain myself while I make this thing. It's like, hey, I worked unpaid for 8 months and now I need to recuperate that and hopefully make a little money on top. Here's a thing. Do you want to buy it? It's, I don't know what the solution is there. It's just like, it's just kind of, it's a thing I've really felt with this latest project in particular of like, this needs to feel done in a way, you know, that I maybe haven't with other projects because I've gone for smaller goals, but to go after like a bigger goal, it's like it needs to feel done. And I'm thinking of like our friends doing a fool's errand right now. Like Jay and B have spent over a year working on that game with like no pay, you know, and to get it to a point where it's like, yeah, it's done pretty much. It's now just like, let's make it look pretty and print it, which, yeah, it's, I don't know.
I know that when I look at Kickstarter campaigns or backer campaigns, the ones that I back, I'm often, and this is, you know, I'm part of the problem. I look at it as saying, oh, I'm buying this, not as I'm supporting this project. It's, no, I'm buying this thing that's already made. And even though I know intellectually this thing is still getting made, these are just proofs, yada, yada, I am buying the thing I'm seeing on screen. So, I mean, like, there's a good tip there for people who are running backer kits and crowdfunding campaigns of you got to make it look like it's a thing that's already complete. You've got to give
even people, if you don't have it yet, you know, that's the kind of thing. It's like now, like the quote unquote trick is that like even if you haven't finished it, like you got to give it a sense that you have, you know, like you like with the time we have, like I couldn't afford to print an example deck before because that just would have been untenable. Like I, you know, but I made really, really good use of mock-ups. Like that's the, you know, mock-ups are a really powerful tool. And if I can recommend anything for your Kickstarter campaign is do some mock-ups.
I think there is, you know, a thing that we struggled with the Kickstarter campaign for Bitcherton, that going into that, you know, that campaign was really, I didn't know if it was going to work. You know, we had a great cast. We had a great pilot episode. We showed you what you were going to get. But there weren't any real, you weren't getting any physical things. Like, you're getting some access to bonus talkbacks. You're getting, you're able to, like, name a character. But I'm not giving you a physical book. And it was kind of a, you know, we succeeded. We crowdfunded. We're able to make the first season. We're making it. It'll be released by the time this has come out. But it is still kind of a mixed success because it wasn't a runaway success. It was enough to make the thing.
We made the budget. Yep.
And it kind of goes to show that, like, crowdfunding is, it's tough to be, it feels like it's really not a platform for, like, hey, help me make this thing. It's here, let me sell you this thing, which is a bummer. But it's just the reality of it.
I think in my most pessimistic days, I worry that that translates to platforms like Patreon as well, where, like, Patreon is now really about what you get and not about being a patron of the arts for those people. I don't know. I think there's a mix. I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there who still see it that way. And, you know, obviously we have a great set of patrons who really support us, who I think support us mostly because they just really like us. But, you know, that we put out some great bonus content too. But yeah, I don't know. I hope that we don't lose that idea of like crowdfunding to help someone make something, Patreon to help someone make something. Anyway, it feels like a dour note.
Well, no, I think the thing that's coming across media right now is that, like, you know, all of the subscription services are slowly just becoming cable again. All of them have ads now, unless you pay way more money. People are starting to become more selective with the things that they support. So, like, rather than having every streaming service, you have the two that you really pay for, the two that you really care about, and maybe you'll get a third for a month when a new show comes out. And I think people are being more selective with the things that they support in terms of, like, podcasts or Patreon. Like, you know, I can't afford to support everything that I like, but the things that I really like, the things that I really love, I'll throw a little bit of money towards that because I want to see it keep getting made, and I want to support those creators. I think we'll start seeing people, as this kind of rift keeps happening, especially with, like, big streaming platforms, we'll see people getting much more specific and much more dialed in on the things that they care about and want to support.
30 sickos.
Like, all, you know, it goes back to the 1,000 fans theory. Like, all you need is 1,000 fans. If we had 1,000 patrons right now,
we'd be fine.
We'd be feeling great. We, you know, everyone would be able to kind of live off some of that.
So in the interest of both wrapping up and sort of, you know, bringing a positive note in here on those sort of mixed bag assessments of the industry, although generally I feel really positive about it, what are we sort of, what's next for Talk of the Table, and what are our hopes for the future of this show?
I mean, what's next? Keep doing it.
Yeah.
Keep doing it. Keep getting on more and more interesting people. I think, you know, I think my side of it will often be like, hey, what big guest can we get? And I think Elliot's side will often be like, hey, what's the really interesting indie guest we can get? And I hope those two things keep existing side by side, because we'll keep getting this great mix of things, because there's great lessons to learn from people like, you know, John Harper or Brennan Lee Mulligan. And there's also great lessons to learn from significantly smaller indie designers like our conversation with Aaron Voigt. And I think I want that mix to continue, even though there's always a part of me that is always looking towards like, oh, let's do the big thing. And that's, you know, my better demons coming out.
Yeah. And I think we want to do those roundtables we've been talking about doing for a long time. I think that that didn't come together this year. But, you know, I'd love to do some roundtables, and I'd love to do some really intentional return guests. You know, we've obviously done a few conversations with Taylor, and we've now talked to Jay a handful of times, Jay Dragon, between this and My First Dungeon. But I think I'd love to have, like, the Triangle Agency folks back on to be like, hey, how are you feeling now that you've, like, you know, they're about to deliver the book, you know? So I'd like to do some more intentional kind of repeat conversations going forward, and some roundtables would be fun.
I would love to just have this space be a space where we can bring on weird combinations of people and have them talk with each other and see, like, because, like, we're two people who have very specific points of view. We can get great conversations out of people, but there are certain paths that we would just never think to go down. And getting two different people in the room, you find those new paths that are interesting and are exciting that we would just never reach because we have two very specific viewpoints. The other thing we want to do, and this will, I believe, have been announced by the time this episode comes out, is we want to add Talk of the Table to our Patreon. We're in the process of a Patreon rebrand, and our plan is to add bonus Talk of the Table content to a new many-sided media Patreon rather than just a My First Dungeon Patreon. So if you support us on Patreon, which is the most direct and helpful way you can support us, if you're looking for one way that is best to support me, Elliot, Abby, Shenouk, and all the different projects we make, it is supporting us on Patreon. And short of that, it is rating, it is reviewing, it is following, it is telling people about the show. I cannot stress that enough. If you want this show, My First Dungeon, Bitcherton, to stay around, you gotta tell people about it. You gotta say, this is a thing I like. If you can't say that with your wallet, say it with your voice. If you can't say it with your voice, say it with your 5-star rating. All those things are very much the difference between us continuing to do this and not being able to continue to do it. I think there's been a part of this conversation that's been very dour, but also like, I'm very hopeful going forward. This podcast has grown a lot in the past year, honestly, a lot in just the past couple of months. Our Patreon has been growing over the past year, and hopefully we'll grow even more once we combine My First Dungeon and Talk of the Table. We funded Bitcherton. We're making it. We've got a ton of incredibly cool guests. You've made Rom-Com Drama Bomb. You're currently funding The Time We Have. You've gone full-time. I've gone full-time. We are overall
doing it.
Very positive, forward-moving year. And we just got to keep that momentum up going into 2025.
Oh boy. Much to do, much to do.
As ever, the reward for good work is more work, which is both a blessing and a curse, but one that we're both happy to take on.
If you listen to this episode, you must really like this show. So thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for tuning in. And we're excited to make more for you.
Hopefully this is the most navel-gazy we get.
Once a year we get a good look at the belly, and then we move on.
But sometimes you need that. You can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. Am I right?
You can't know where you're going unless you know where your belly button is.
That's true. That's a Talk of the Table staple. Talk of the Table staple. That's almost something.
Talk of the Table staple is almost something.
It's almost something.
All right. For fear of us descending into bits, one more time, please rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody.